May it please the court, good morning, your honors. My name is Thomas L. Canaan. I'm registration number 10558. With me at council table is Bruce McCray, registration number 3894. I represent SEGA on this appeal, and Bruce represents all the appellants. Before I begin the guts of my argument, I'd like to just give a little background on how structured settlements are used through the workers' compensation system itself. In all death and catastrophic injury cases, virtually all, the director's role is to administer a system that manages settlements, negotiations and settlements of claims that involve structures. What this means is the method of funding future liabilities is handled by an investment of present dollars on the part of the insurer or the employer who is settling the case. The mechanism of recovery for the injured worker assumes that the present value of the settlement, meaning the lump sum or capital sum provided by the insurer or the employer, works to include an embedded interest. This is maybe created by an annuity investment or by a growth mechanism for capital investment, but it is available to extend the value of the recovery to the injured worker for future liabilities. In these catastrophic injury cases and death cases, there is a requirement now under federal law that a Medicare set-aside trust be established to pay for future medical benefits. These are virtually always structured in some manner or fashion, so that there's present money put on the table, which is designed to be stretched out over time with the embedded interest that's in the money furnished by the employer. Settlements contemplate this, and the director uses a large staff of pre-hearing administrative law judges who negotiate these settlements. He is familiar with this concept, he uses it, he knows this is how the world of workers' compensation works. It's our position in this appeal that, at least as to one aspect of the dispute, this is similar to how probated settlements work on the claims of personal injury recovery for incompetence, minor children, or the mentally incapacitated. In these situations, these settlements cannot be achieved, and the third-party defendants are very ill-advised if they do not guarantee that the court will direct and ensure that the settlement funds are being used to benefit the injured party, who is not otherwise available to take care of his own interests and make his own choices as to the use of the money he recovers. What this means is that the third party who is legally responsible for the loss will provide an initial funding with an ongoing stream of benefits for future liabilities extended to the injured party. In these catastrophic cases, the recovery is financed by the third party very frequently, contemplating growth in the value of the money made. That's by purchasing annuities or other interest-generating investments. The recovery contemplates the function of embedded interest. So the role of the director, he administers a complicated system, and he definitely has a role administratively that is far more significant in supervising settlements than does the ordinary administrative law judge, and certainly than the Industrial Claim Appeals Office, which has nothing to do with this process. The reason why this is important is the way this case progressed. It began with a motion and it ended with a motion, having to do with imposing liability upon the Colorado Insurance Guarantee Association. The Guarantee Association stepped into the shoes of an insolvent insurer, and it has liabilities and responsibilities similar to that of the liable insurer. There are also problems that must be faced in terms of potential liabilities for the employer who is funding issues that may arise in SEGA cases. I want to quote the director's view of the law of this case because I believe it states in a nutshell what the appellant's position is. Although the right of subrogation in section 841.203c is not without limits, the director does not know of any statutory section or case law, nor does the claimant cite any to support the contention that the interest payments at issue should be exempted from subrogation. Section 841-203 provides that the right of subrogation shall extend to all monies collected from the third parties causing the injury for all economic damages. As the claimant has set forth in his motion, the internal rate of return is part of the mechanism to fund the economic damages awarded to the claimant.
What are you quoting from?
Oh, this is the director's order of April 8, 2010. He's the first one to address the issues that eventually went to hearing because he said he could not decide the issue as a matter of law, that there were factual issues being raised by the claimant that would require an ALJ to address those issues and resolve them. And that's what happened. But through that process, it still appeared before the ALJ as the same basic motion, with some additional changes made periodically to represent the payments being made by claimant's accountant on his behalf. So the amounts in interest kept changing a bit, but the underlying motion was basically the same.
Underlying motion is the third amended motion to compel.
Yes,
is that right?
There was an original motion to compel,
right,
that the director resolved. The final motion was resolved in part in the claimant's favor and in part against the claim.
And what's the relevance of what the director had to say, given that what's before us is a decision of the ICAO?
The reason why, Your Honor, is I think frequently the court takes a look at what the administrative agency has ruled as some kind of guidance in interpreting whether or not the proper rule of law has been followed. In this case, our position is if anyone is in a position to interpret this rule of law, it's the director of the division, not the ICAO. They don't deal with these matters, and it's no wonder they can be led astray because it's relatively complicated in the manner in which the issue was presented. That's our position, Your Honor. But the truth is, the law is, you determine this issue de novo by interpreting the statute yourself. Just in terms of the part I quoted from the director so far, the claimant has not relied on Colorado case law to support his position. He's found cases involving mid-level appeals in Pennsylvania with a completely different system and a Missouri Industrial Commission order that has nothing to do with Colorado and has a completely different system of workers' compensation. On the appellant side, we are relying upon established case law in Colorado through the Kennedy case and especially the Simon case that we believe is right on point and certainly on point to support the underlying decision of the administrative law judge. We believe the Industrial Claim Appeals Office had no idea of what it was really doing when it addressed that issue in light of the Simon case. And that was argued by the respondents to the ALJ at the time this case arose, and it was a fundamental part of this case, also relied upon by the Supreme Court in the Jorgensen case. So the issue we're looking at is the internal rate of return as a part of the mechanism to fund the economic damages awarded to the claimant. The internal rate of return is presumably money that was collected by the claimant and therefore subject to the subrogation statute. That's the underlying point that supported the result in the Kennedy decision, where the claimant had structured a settlement that was only in terms of loss of enjoyment of life, a non-economic recovery, as a way of structuring his settlement. And the court said that is not a way to get around the statute.
Was this money actually collected by the claimant?
In the case of the three doctor defendants, the claimant's estate was collecting money provided by the insurers for those defendants. In the case of Health One, of the hospital, there was actually a decision reached in court, and the funds have always been administered by the defendant through its insurance company. The order of the district court specifically holds the defendant liable for making the payments and establishes the payment mechanism through COPIC, its insurer. So that's the aspect of this case that was decided by the ALJ directly in keeping with the views of the director and completely consistent with the result in the Simon case. It's our position in this appeal that there really isn't much legal doubt that the ICAP was off on the law when it determined that aspect of the case. The more difficult part of the case is that relating to the recoveries from the third-party doctors, because our position is that these recoveries were managed and directed by the probate court, and that they could be used to pay for the very same losses that would otherwise have to be paid by SIGA. The orders made clear that these are to cover those losses. So the question is, does that contemplated interest earned amount to embedded interest that's contained in the original payment made to the administrators of the estate for the injured worker?
Counsel, let me, when you use the term embedded interest, what is your understanding of that term?
It is that contemplated view of the parties that the lump sum that is received will be used to generate additional income as a part of the recovery achieved, so that there will be money through time to pay for the loss that makes the injured worker whole. Our position is that there's two factors that are always looked at in interpreting this statute. And those factors are that the claimant cannot receive double recovery. And we've gone at some length in discussing that in our briefs. But the other factor, which maybe we haven't emphasized enough, is the third party whose negligence or wrongdoing is responsible for the loss is supposed to be the party who's paying for the loss. And in this case, that third party doctors did furnish the money to pay for that loss, and for an ongoing stream of money worth, it's hard to say, because that's an aspect of the case where the record is not clear. But it wasn't established that the money wasn't continuing to be available through that source of funds, because it was contemplated at the time of the settlement that we see structured settlement trust established in the orders and in the records from that are part of the record in this case. We see trust mechanisms to guide the conservator and her counsel in making these payments. And because these were things that were contemplated at the time of the settlement of the case, when the insurer was not participating in that settlement, these are things that should be seen as a part of the recovery of the injured worker. And under the plain language of the statute, it's the recovery that is achieved by the injured worker that forms the basis for the offset credit. It's a credit we're talking about here, not a direct recovery of the value for monies already paid by the insurer. It's the ongoing credit that it is entitled to receive. I would like to reserve the last 2 minutes and 45 seconds. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Good morning. May it please the court. Robert Horowitz, registration number 17848, appearing on behalf of Mr. Rodriguez. At council table this morning is my co-counsel, Pat Clisham, as well as Alice Mosley, representing the Attorney General's Office on behalf of the ICAO. Your Honor, per my agreement with Ms. Mosley, I'd like to reserve 2 minutes of my time for her, and I'll take the balance. Mr. Rodriguez views this case as a simple one of statutory interpretation. Contrary to the arguments of SIGA, we are not looking to authorities outside of Colorado. We're looking to the plain wording and meaning of the statute. There were only two issues presented in this case up to the most recent involvement of new counsel for SIGA, and that was whether or not the investment returns of Mr. Rodriguez on his settlements, which were lump sum settlements, are subject to offset, and whether or not the interest embedded in the periodic payments, the annuities purchased, are subject to offset. The statute is clear. The only thing that SIGA can subrogate against, can recover, is in fact benefits that they're liable for, medical and wage benefits. Investment returns are not equivalent to those benefits, and interest is not equivalent to those benefits. We find ourselves in the odd position of having SIGA, we believe, seeking a windfall in that it seeks approximately $2 million of interest just on the annuities for benefits for which it is not liable. It is not a double recovery because Mr. Rodriguez is not seeking the same benefits. He is provided SIGA with a full credit for each and every settlement amount that he received and for the present value judgments. Those present value judgments were, in fact, the wage and medical losses. After the jury verdict was adjusted, after attorney's fees reduced that verdict, after comparative negligence principles were applied, those present value judgments for earnings and for his medical losses were, in fact, the benefits for which Sigel was liable, and they received a credit. Very unlike the claimant in Simon, which sought to have funds deposited in a trust and then disingenuously argued he didn't receive the benefits, Mr. Rodriguez, from the inception of this case and his very first motion and every iteration of that motion, has provided a credit for the settlement amounts, the three against the physicians, as well as the present value judgments, which are in fact his wage and medical loss. The only reason Mr. Rodriguez received periodic payments was due to an unrelated piece of legislation now repealed that the intention of which was to prevent severely incapacitated individuals from dissipating their recoveries. The periodic payments are merely an investment of Mr. Rodriguez's judgments. That's all they are. Perhaps a quick review of the facts in this case will illuminate that a little clearer.
Before you go there, let me just ask you a real practical question. So you're seeking an affirmance of the ICAO's order here.
That's correct. Correct.
All right. If the panel were to agree with you, what happens? What's the practical effect of that kind of an order in terms of the money that's out there and is supposed to be paid?
Well, the record is fixed, Your Honor. We filed a motion asking for a specific amount of benefits due in a lump sum from the past, as well as the exact amount of credit Sigel would be entitled to in the future. So on a practical level, Your Honor, and I didn't want to jinx it and run the math in advance of this panel's decision, but they will owe us a lump sum because they have not paid benefits that are due, because they are taking a full credit for the periodic payments received, which includes the interest component for which they're not liable and for which the subrogation statute does not allow them to claim an offset or credit. Going forward, our economist, Dr. McNulty, whose findings were wholly stipulated to by SIGA, whose findings are comprised in Judge Friend's findings of fact and are binding on this panel, have for each and every month going forward throughout Mr. Rodriguez's expected life, has the principal amount for which they will be entitled to a credit, that is the present value judgment amounts contained within each payment, and the interest amount for which they're not liable, the statute precludes them from seeking a credit. And I hope I've answered His Honor's questions.
But you're understanding that by affirming the ICAO opinion, by the ICAO's opinion, just staying with that, if that were to be affirmed, and you know that remains to be seen, but by virtue of the ICAO opinion, they're required to pay the lump sum amount. I think you originally asked for about $500,000, plus start making payments going, plus whatever has occurred in the meantime, plus make further payments in the future?
That's correct, Your Honor. The future payments will be the delta between the principal component of each of the earning annuity and the medical annuity and the balance of Mr. Rodriguez's medical needs. Let me, Your Honor, just provide a little bit of factual background, because I don't believe SIGA's counsel properly characterized what occurred in this case. In this case, there isn't a structured settlement that this court is being asked to examine. What happened in this case is we settled, albeit one of the cases was through an arbitration, but we settled with the two physicians and received three lump sum settlement amounts. Those defendants were then done, and the only thing that we had to do was satisfy Chief Judge Bachman in Adams County District Court that our investment choices were, in fact, legitimate and appropriate ones. There was no involvement by the defendant. There was no further indication it would be a structured settlement or otherwise, except in one instance, at the recommendation of an annuitant, we did buy a single structured settlement that one of the defendant's counsel cooperated with us for tax purposes. But the settlements occurred, and then we on our own decided how those investments would be made. The situation that SICA's counsel is describing is a structured settlement directly from a tortfeasor. Similarly, in this case, Your Honors, we had a jury trial. We obtained present value judgments. Mr. Rodriguez's wage and medical losses were fixed. The only thing that occurred is subsequent to that, the carrier, the medical malpractice carrier, elected to pay in periodic payments, and then we had a problem. And that problem was you simply couldn't dice up the amount of the wage and medical loss, or Mr. Rodriguez would lose the value of his money. And for that reason, Judge Myers correctly reasoned, you're going to have to pay interest if you want to pay it in periodic payments. And that interest is undisputed. It's undisputed because SIGA stipulated to it, pursuant to a stipulation of facts, and it's uncontested, and it's contained in Judge Friend's findings of fact. That interest component is undisputed, and it is similarly undisputed that interest is not an item of subrogation to which SIGA is entitled to claim an offset. There is not a single case in Colorado which would suggest a workers' comp carrier is entitled to an offset or a credit or to recover interest. In fact, quite the contrary, the Hoosen case makes clear in a case where the claimant actually withheld funds, contrary to a subrogation agreement with the carrier, that the claimant was not responsible for interest, notwithstanding a finding of wrongful withholding. And in that case, the court went to great lengths to say there is nothing in that subrogation statute which limits the carrier's right, which would entitle them to interest. The subrogation agreement limited the reimbursement to amounts that the carrier would be liable for. Jurgensen reiterated the excess clause that in Colorado, our statute is clear. The carrier can only claim a subrogation interest, an offset, or a credit against items identified in that statute. And the only items identified in that statute are benefits for which they're liable. It is undisputed. Interest is not one of those benefits. And it is undisputed that there is interest embedded in those periodic payments as stipulated to by SIGA.
Hospital settlement. The jury calculated what the amounts of expenses would be over a period going forward and any other economic damages. Then the jury was required to reduce that to a present value. Is that right?
That is correct.
And then from that is what the court ordered, that there be a funding mechanism put in place to determine that present value. Is that right?
Your Honor, yes. The judge, after the defendant Health One elected to make the payments in periodic, elected to have the judgments paid in periodic payments, required that annuities be submitted so that Mr. Rodriguez's money could essentially be invested so that he could receive the benefit of the lost time, of the value of his judgments.
Since the jury had reduced that to present value, it's clear that the interest earned on that will be earned in the future on that amount would go to fund the future medical expenses, right?
Practically speaking, Your Honor, they will go to pay whatever needs Mr. Rodriguez has. But I believe there's a big distinction between the fact that all of Mr. Rodriguez's amounts will go to his care and the fact that the jury never awarded wage or benefits that are equivalent to that interest. They awarded a lump sum, and that forever seals the amount of wage and medical losses of Mr. Rodriguez. Anything that happens subsequent to the entry of that present value judgment, such as the purchase of these annuities, has nothing to do with wage or medical losses. It's simply the time value of money and Mr. Rodriguez's investment of his present value judgments. And there is not a single authority in this state which suggests a carrier can subrogate against investment returns or interest. And the statute doesn't allow for it is why there isn't an authority. That SIGA is essentially asking this court to rewrite the statute and include the word interest in returns when in fact they are not presently in that statute. The director, Your Honor, just so the record is clear, had absolutely nothing to do with this case. The director was not involved in the original tort action. The director was not involved in our conferences with Judge Bachman in the probate court. The director was a stranger to this entire action. I just make one more comment, Your Honor, with the minute I have remaining. All of these arguments, these structured settlement arguments, these circumvention arguments, are brand new arguments which are barred by claim preclusion. Make no mistake, if we were required to, we could rebut them easily. But, Your Honor, I have not labored to include substantive responses, if you will. I didn't want to take the bait. This matter was briefed before Judge Friend. This matter was briefed before the ICAO, and you will not see the word circumvention in any papers until this matter reached this court. And therefore, it is, in fact, barred by claim preclusion. For my agreement, Your Honors, I'll turn it over to Ms. Mosley.
Thank you. Mosley, you've got about 2 minutes and 10 seconds to finish up.
Thank you. May it please the court, Alice Hosley on behalf of the Industrial Claim Appeals Office, registration number 32195. With all the discussions going on today, first I would like to clarify that interpretation of the statute is exactly what the panel does. They are involved in the they are part of the agency. They are, that is their role, is to interpret the workers' comp statutes. They are front and center in interpreting how these statutes are to be, how they are to be read and how they are to be applied. So I would like to make that my first point. The panel has absolutely has a role in this case in interpreting the statutes that apply to the workers' comp arena. Secondly, you know, I came in this case well beyond all the facts and the litigation that had been completed prior, and it's a pretty simple issue. It really comes down to the plain language of the statute. I think it has been unnecessarily confused and convoluted. This is a simple issue as to the right to subrogate. The language, as the panel found, does not implicitly or explicitly allow for interest. I would like to point out that the judgment entered on the payment obligations was done so that there could be a clear remedy in the event of non-payment. So, you know, these periodic payments, you know, the judgment was broken down into these individual marks so that if there was non-payment, it would be easier to try and recoup that as opposed to these big broad amounts that then the amounts would have to be distinguished. I see my time is up. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sosling. Annan, you've got 2 minutes and 44 seconds for whatever rebuttal you would like to give.
Thank you, Your Honor. First, I talked about a legal fiction, or it's actually a factual fiction that's been addressed by the ICAP and then argued in the briefs. There is no question that the defendants in the Health One case controlled payment of benefits through periodic payments to this injured worker. There's just no question about it. The accountants at trial hearing testified that the full value in order to be achieved of the loss had to include the interest component. There would be no way for the plaintiff, Mr. Rodriguez, to have collected on his judgment if it hadn't included the interest component. So it was a contemplated feature of the judgment, which is our whole point, that in these kinds of situations, embedded interest is a contemplated feature of the recovery. And if you look at the Simon case, I think you will have no doubt that that was a structured settlement with the annuity that was set up. It's an annuity that's based on interest being gained on an initial lump sum investment, and it was paid periodically to a trust fund not managed by the claimant at all.
And that's the same kind of situation that we have going on here. COPIC is paying money on behalf of Health One. And it's not the claimant's money, and it never has been. So it's a legal, it's a fiction to try to argue otherwise. The claimant lost that issue in the Colorado Supreme Court. As far as what would happen, a question that was raised to Mr. Horowitz. If this court only upholds that feature of the order of the ALJ that found that CEA is entitled to that credit, then there is no other issue other than the fact they also awarded the other payments made, that the interest collected on the settlements with the third-party doctors would not be included in the credit. The way the order stands from the ALJ, that and the way it was presented to the Industrial Claim Appeals Office, it was only that credit issue from SIGA that the ICAP reversed. Otherwise, it would have to be remanded for further proceedings based on the order that was on appeal, which was simply the order of the ALJ. It's our position, however, that the record does not show any accounting for the investments that were achieved through the third-party doctor settlements, and it says nothing about the settlement documents and what the defendants actually contemplated when they entered into those settlements, because it is the ordinary procedure. If you're settling a case, you want to make sure an incompetent defendant is having his interest protected by the embedded interest in the settlement. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you to both counsel for your arguments. The case will stand submitted. The division will issue an opinion in due course.